Donald Trump has COVID, why we're obsessed with Hillary Duff's house, and a chat with neuropsychologist Dr. Hannah Coral about how to break up with toxic friends.
We're media slashies, Maggie and Jasmine, and you're listening to our weekly chat about pop culture, current affairs, the internet, and our lives.
We would like to acknowledge that the Wurundjeri, Turrbal, and Bunurong people are the traditional custodians of the land upon which we live, work, and record this podcast.
We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging. Sovereignty was never ceded. So tell me, you got these really cool rainbow rollerblades?
Roller skates, actually. Oh,
what's the difference?
What's the difference?
Yeah.
Rollerblades are the ones that look like ice skates, kind of, but they're wheels. So it's like one line. And then skates are the one with the four wheels and the stopper.
Ah, I used to have rollerblades.
I think they're way cooler. But the skates are harder, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have been sucked into the roller skating trend of this year. I found it on TikTok, of course, and was like hypnotized by all these amazing women, just like, so cool, like skating down the street, skating backwards, dancing, spinning. And I was like, that looks amazing. Looks like such a fun hobby. I am going to get some. It is so hard. I went out with my friend Brittany on Friday. And like, obviously learning a new skill, I expected it to be a little tricky, but I am quite good at ice skating. I did ballet and like, I love yoga. So all those like balancey sports. And yeah, it took me ages to get into it. And Brittany's been doing it for months. And even she is like only just starting to learn tricks now. But I'm kind of excited. It's nice to start something new and like be a beginner again at something and have a hobby that doesn't have anything to do with my work or a screen. You know, because even like I love reading, but even then, like, I'm always thinking, could this be an article or like, am I going to talk about it on Culture Club? So it's nice to be outside of the house on my roller skates. So yeah.
A hobby we can't monetize. Woo!
Yes.
I thought it'd be easier because there's so many wheels.
Me too. It's all about balance, trying to balance, really. I was wearing like a helmet, skate pads, like knee pads, elbow pads, look really sexy. But safety is sexy, guys, so.
You heard it here first.
But it was actually when my friend and I had finished skating and it was really hot, so we were getting ice blocks, when I got a text message from our mutual friend Lizzie that Donald Trump, president of the United States, was diagnosed with COVID. What a day that was.
That was so funny. I know. I feel like everyone's been quite civil online at times, being like, you know, I don't wish sickness on anyone, but, you know, insert laughter. But it just feels so ironic. It's like, oh, of course. How did you feel?
At first I was like, wow, karma is a bitch and this is going to be so interesting. And then by the afternoon I'd sat down and I was like, hold on a second. This is just way too convenient. Like 2 days after, you know, even Fox News was saying how badly he acted in the debate. After his tax came out that he paid $750. And suddenly no one's talking about that anymore, are they? They're all focusing on his health. But then as the days have gone by, I think he is actually really ill. Mm. Like doctors have come out the front of the hospital and made statements and stuff. So I can't tell. Like I think if he was still in the White House and just like at home in his bunker or whatever, I would say that maybe it's just a publicity stunt. But the fact that he's like on oxygen and he did a statement, like a video statement, and he looked quite pale compared to his normal orange glow. So we'll just have to wait and see. Honestly, it's like watching a car crash. What have you been up to this week apart from following American politics?
Yeah, oh God, I watched the debate and it was the most stress-inducing day ever. I was literally put off. I was like so anxious and I'm like, I'm blaming you, Donald. Like, it was horrible. But apart from that, a little call back to a few episodes ago when we were talking about The Social Dilemma, the documentary about social media, I just want to publicly announce that my screen time is going down every week. And yay. Thank you. I mean, it's still ridiculously high, but I'm really proud of that.
Can you tell us what your numbers are?
I'm still embarrassed because it's going to be more than like everybody listening. But now, okay, so it was sitting at about 8 hours and now it was like 6 hours, 45.
That's the same as mine this week. Woo! That's so funny. Look at us go. But also we do use it a lot for work, as we've discussed. We don't need to go through this whole thing again.
Exactly.
But yeah, I'm so proud of you. That's Thank exciting. You. And you were published on Broadsheet this week. Congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Very surreal moment for me. I interned there 2 years ago. It was my first internship. And I was like a little baby, so I didn't want to do any, like, I was too scared to actually speak up and do proper writing. So all my things are like, Messina has a new flavor. And that's about the extent of my articles.
Like
so
a bit newsy.
Yeah, all newsy. And I really enjoyed it. And I wasn't like, I definitely don't regret anything. And it was super valuable. But it was nice to write a piece about, you know, my personal experiences. I kind of timed it so accidentally. It fell in conjunction with the Mid-Autumn Festival, which is also known as the Mooncake Festival. So basically, it's just we ate really good.
Your piece was such a nice personal essay, and I feel like I learned a lot about your culture, and it was nice to like hear more about how you've been spending lockdown with your mom and like learning more and getting more involved in cooking. So that's really nice. And where can people find the article if they want to read it?
Sure thing. They can find it in my link in bio at Yeah Mags. Oh my God, I feel so heavy on the self-promotion this episode, but yeah, it's in the link in my bio. This week, we're exploring toxic friendships in all its messiness. We were lucky enough to chat with Dr. Hannah Correll to find out what makes a toxic friend, how to decide whether a friendship is over, and what the best ways of breaking up with friends are.
Dr. Hannah Correll is a neuropsychologist who works in assessing and helping conditions of the brain, such as autism, ADHD, dementia, and more. Dr. Hannah is also now the author of How to Break Up with Friends, From Friend Shit to Friend Split, a book about how you can identify and ditch your crappy companions, which is being released this week on the 7th of October. Welcome, Dr. Hannah, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys. Pleasure to be with you.
Oh, the pleasure's all ours. Thank you for making the time this week. So, can you please tell us about yourself and what got you into neuropsychology?
Thank you. Well, let me say, I'm such a fan of the Culture Club. Good on you guys. Love Aussie Girls making some amazing podcasts. So, you're putting some great content out there. So, shout out to the Culture Club fan. And yeah, maybe we get a book club going. So, I was a psychology student for like 10 years. So I did my psychology studies all around Australia. So I was in Canberra, then I was in Melbourne. I briefly taught at Ballarat for a little while. So, you know, if there's any psych students listening, hi, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So that is a long process of, you know, years and years of undergrad and honours and masters. And as you go through that, you get exposed to lots of different types of psychology you can practice. So there's like forensics if you're interested in criminology. There's organizational if you're interested in like HR and how to make billions for a company. There's clin-psych if you're interested in those like really interesting psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia and bipolar and anxiety, depression. And then there's the science of the brain and the way that the brain works, all the weird and wonderful things that our brain does when it goes wrong. I'm a zombie. I love brains. I love brains. I really love them. did I answer your question? Was there something else in there?
No, I guess that's how you got into it. So you have a new book coming out this week, which is exploring more about the topic of friendship. So could you tell us more about the book and why you decided to hone in on friendships and relationships specifically?
So I suppose because I know all about the brain as a neuro and because I've got a PhD in neuroscience as well, and because I know all about relationships because I'm also a psychologist, I sort of was very fascinated by the science and the neuroscience of relationships. It's always kind of caught my eye, you know, how there's all sorts of cool theories, and maybe one day we can go into it, about, you know, how to get the most from people and how to get people to buy things and how to get people engaged. There's heaps of amazing theories on it. And one area that we don't really have a lot of information on is things like friendship. So we have information on relationships and parenthood and all these different aspects of the growth cycle, but we don't have a heap of information on friendship, especially what it does to the brain. So that's my science hat on there. I was fascinated with science. Then there's like my real life hat, like my actual I'm a person, I'm a human being hat. And I'm 32. You guys are really young, but I'm 32. And so I hit 30. And when you hit 30, it's like, a ton of bricks smacking you in the face, and you're like, oh my God, I'm 30. And you have these, it's kind of cliched for a reason. You have this existential crisis where you realize, who is around me, and are these people kind people? Are they helping me and supporting me as much as I'm helping and supporting them? And I had a couple of instances where I realized that, you know, for myself and for other people in my life, they were telling me that their friends were letting them down. And I was experiencing times where I was deeply, deeply hurt by the behavior of these people who I had bent over backwards for. I was like, I love these people so much. You know, can I, if they needed something, I was like, let me give you the shirt off my back. Let me give you the shirt off my mum's back. Like, I'm like, let me help you. But then, you know, when I needed help, I was like, where they all go? Where are they? So it kind of bore out of that. I was sort of like, you know, we have a sisterhood, we have a brotherhood. Like, where's the friendhood? You know? Then I started writing one day, and I didn't even know it was happening. And before I knew it, I had a book, and I don't even know how it happened. And here we are.
You were just talking briefly before about your own personal experiences with friendships, and I think we've all experienced some sort of that to some degree. So why do you think that is, that friendship breakups aren't spoken about as much as romantic breakups?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's so common for us to talk about the toxic boyfriend or the toxic girlfriend, the crazy ex-girlfriend or the shit boyfriend. That's very in to put our foot down, and society's gotten more and more woke about things like emotional abuse and manipulation and gaslighting, because, you know, like even 50 years ago, mental health was really stigmatized. It still is, but it's less so. We're having this social movement towards it's okay to not be okay, like It's Okay Day. And we have other movements like the No Fucks movement by like Mark Manson and Sarah Knight, who wrote their books, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. So those social movements have started to make it okay to be honest about our mental health. And it's slowly seeping into different layers of society over time. So when we moved into, you know, personal, it's okay to say I'm not okay. It's okay now to call out relationships in a romantic sense that are not okay. Friendship is a really tough one, though, because it's kind of on the outer periphery of our circle of awareness when it comes to mental health. And there's a lot of societal norms that are going on that we're not even aware of, that have trained us to believe that you are never allowed to complain about your friends. And that if you have a friend, that a friend is a friend is a friend no matter what, and they should always be a friend. And if you cut a friend out of your life, you're a bad person for doing that. And there's very little acknowledgement of the boundaries in a friendship. There's this real mentality in society that friendship is altruistic, which means that it's like this idea of all give and no take. And if you were to expect something in return, then you're being selfish for expecting something. You should just give to a friendship and expect nothing back in return. You're a good person if you give, 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 and you never expect anything back. Don't do things for friends and expect something back. And that's really beautiful. It's very, you know, martyr-like. That's really beautiful of you. But what that invariably results in is that it's actually a reflection of kind of poor boundaries, because you're letting people take and take and take. And friendship truly at its core is based on a relationship, which means that there's two people and there's a reciprocation going on there. There's a give and a take and a back and a forth. And it's okay to expect certain things from your friends. For example, you expect them to behave like a friend. So be trusting, be supportive, be affectionate, be respectful. And that kind of flies in the face of what most of society tells us, which is expect nothing, give everything. And we affect our tribe. So everyone here is a friend. All of us right now is a friend. Every person on this planet has a friend and is a friend. You only have one person you're in a romantic relationship. Usually you only have one person you're in a romantic relationship with. But friends, we're all friends. So we're all accountable to this societal norm that you give and you take. So people are a bit resistant to any kind of new tribe mentality that puts them in the spotlight as well to say, you are actually also accountable to ensure that you are putting your best into a friendship. And if you're not putting your best into a friendship, then now society is hopefully going to move in the direction where we feel confident and able to say to people, I expected more from you.
Yeah, definitely. So you were saying before that friendship should be, you know, respectful and should be a give and take. But what are some signs of a toxic friend and maybe some less obvious ones as well?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Jasmine. The thing that I think confuses a lot of people about toxic friendship is that sometimes the behavior isn't really overt. Like it's not always super clear that that person is perhaps behaving toxically. So you've got your really obvious behaviors that like slap you in the face like a wet fish. Like this person is bullying me. This person is making derogatory comments to me. This person is swearing at me. This person is putting me down. This person is taking my money and not giving it back to me, you know. But then there are the more subtle behaviors where that person might make a more passive aggressive under the radar jab about you, or perhaps the way that they look at you, or the way that their tone and their voice when they speak to you, or the subtle variations in their behavior depending on who's watching. Those kind of more subtle behaviors can be really difficult to pinpoint because they might change depending on what the interaction is. So this interaction, you get a really great friend and you're like, oh, they're really nice to me today. And this interaction, you get a mean friend and you're like, oh, what happened there? I walked away from that feeling really awful for some reason. I'm not quite sure why. And later you're lying in bed awake at night and you're like, oh, it was because she made that comment again about me not having a job yet. Or, oh yeah, it was because she made that comment again about how much I ate over the meal. Oh yeah, she made that comment again about, you know, the guys who I've been seeing again. So, you know, those subtle behaviors might escape your attention initially. And it's only after on reflection that you realize how much that actually hurt you or made you feel less than when you walked away from that interaction. So I think we could be here for hours if I wrote a list of all the different behaviors that a person could do that would be toxic towards you. So I like to go with the general rule of thumb is go with your feel when you are entering the interaction, during the interaction, and after the interaction. If you feel worse after the interaction than before the interaction, if you feel anxious in the lead up to the interaction, and if you feel awful during the interaction, these are all signposts that something's not right in that relationship and that it could be toxic.
That's really great advice. And I really like that kind of holistic look at interactions as well. So let's say someone has identified that, yes, they've got a toxic friend that they just don't want around anymore. What is the best way to approach a friendship breakup? And also maybe some non-confrontational ways of doing it as well? Without ghosting the other person?
Yes, totally. And I do mention that in my book about, you know, this is not your hall pass to ghost people. really good question, Maggie. Okay, so number one, I always say straight off the bat, don't do anything in the heat of the moment. Do not do anything in the heat of the moment. That's not the time to break up. The time when you've had, you know, your four cocktails down and they've just made another comment, that's not the time for the breakup. Don't do it then, whatever you do. Because that's only gonna get you in a place where you're having a little bit of a mudslinging match back and forth. So, you know, we don't want to get down and dirty in the mud with them. We just want to stay high, you know, as Michelle Obama says, when they go low, you go high. So it's always about nothing in the heat of the moment. A friendship breakup is a considered and thought out process, which is why I wrote a book about it and not, you know, an Instagram post about it. It's a thought out process. So the number one thing, golden rule, don't do anything in the heat of the moment. And I will give you a couple of two tips on what to do to consider if you're, if you need a breakup, and then two tips on how to actually do the breakup. So my two tips on, you know, when you're considering, do I need the breakup, is number one, just make sure you've communicated that behavior to your friends or your question mark friend. So when we have toxic behavior, it's so hard for us to actually call the person out on it verbally because we get a bit scared that, you know, it's confronting and, oh, we're going to get in a fight with them and, oh, this is going to be so awkward if I tell them not to do that. I don't know if I can, if I don't know if I can actually verbalize, don't do that to me again. And I really go into this in the book and break down those all or nothing mentalities, these fears that we have that I can't say anything, so I won't say anything at all, which is an all or nothing mentality, that this idea that if I say something, it's going to react in this huge blow up, this huge, I'm going to detonate this bomb of confrontation with this person, so I say nothing at all. And that's not true. That's actually a myth. You can be assertive and set some boundaries and say things really simply. I mean, I literally just put out an app on this called Assert Yourself, which is about how to articulate what you need to in the moment. So that just means going into it ahead of time, knowing what is the behavior that they're going to do? What is the thing that this person always does to me? Is it that they always tell you to shut up? Then next time they do it, you prepare on the car ride there, you say to yourself, please don't speak to me like that. Please don't speak to me like that again. Just that simple, that simple. It's a two-step strategy. Number one, say the behavior they did to you and ask them not to do it again. So please don't speak to me like that again. Please don't tell me to shut up again. Please don't talk to me like that again. Whatever it is the behavior is, you just speak it. And that doesn't mean you have to do it in the moment. You might realize later, you know, you didn't realize in the moment, but later you're allowed to tell them later. You know, I thought about what happened over the weekend and I remembered how you told me to shut up. Please don't speak to me like that again. The second sentence in your two-sentence strategy is if they do it again, then you say, I've asked you not to do that again and you've just done it again. So I'm going to go now because I'm uncomfortable. We can talk about this another time. Okay, so that's you enforcing your boundary. So you said, please don't do X to me again. And if they do, you say, you've just done X to me again. So I'm going to go now and we can talk about this later. That's your number one, communicate. And then number two is the timeline. The timeline. So hopefully you are at a point where you might still be able to give this friend a little bit of leeway to change their behavior, maybe. Or maybe you're right at your end of your tether and you're at your wit's end and you just want to skip to the last step, which is fine. But if you have a little bit of you know, patience left in you, sometimes they will actually change because you've now communicated that behavior to them. The beauty of the communication is when someone's woke you to the behavior that's wrong. And when a friend actually tells you, hey, you've done this to me and now you've done it again, it makes you go, oh my gosh, yeah, I did do that. And I've had that happen to me. I don't know about you guys. You might have had an experience with this as well. I've had a friend say, hey, Han, please don't cancel on me last minute because it meant my weekend was wasted. My Saturday morning was wasted. And I went, oh my God, I've just done that. I'll never do it again to this person because they told me. Like, I don't know if you guys have experienced that.
For sure, I have.
Yeah, it makes you lift your game. You go, oh my gosh, I've just done that. I better make sure I never do that again. And good friends will rise or adjust their behavior. So you can give them that window of opportunity to change. If you have enough left in the tank, it depends how toxic they've been. You might be at the end and there's no more window of opportunity left. But the point with the time period is that you must commit to that ahead of time. So don't say, you know, I'll give them 3 weeks and then, you know, you give them another 3 weeks and another 3 weeks and another 3 weeks. You've got to commit to it ahead of time. It's like that, you know, the crappy boyfriend we all seem to have had like in our early 20s, and we just gave them like, you know, free trial after free trial after free trial, and it just dragged on forever. Like, we just need to set a date, and if it hasn't changed, then that's when we might need to bite the bullet with actually engaging in the breakup.
Yeah, I think it's so important what you were saying about setting boundaries around friendships, because I know for me that I set a lot of boundaries for myself around my relationship and work things. But when it comes to friendships, because I love my friends and really value like relationships, I tend to just give people second chance after second chance. And now at 24, I'm finally being like, right, this is enough. Like, I feel like I'm not getting anything back. And I know myself and a few other friends have kind of lost some friendships over the pandemic. People kind of just naturally like leaving your life. And we had a few questions about it as well. How can you get over friendship breakups when there's no ability for closure and there's lots of hurt feelings?
Yeah, that's a really good question. COVID's brought out a lot of those cracks that were previously there, that we could distract ourselves with other activities and other distractions. We can't now, because it's just in your face. There's no hiding it. It's there, and there's nothing to distract from it. Firstly, I'll say, you know, you're not alone. This is a really tough time, and a lot of we're getting the stats in now to say that a huge number of people are experiencing greater mental health issues. And the people who have been predominantly affected by that are young women, and especially young women who are experiencing isolation from their family, and young women who are isolated from their family and also experiencing job losses. That is like the trifecta of people who have been hit the hardest in terms of mental health and COVID. And obviously, in any time of dire issues, you're going to rely on your closest peer group. You're going to rely on your family, and you're going to rely on your peer group. As I was saying before, if there were initial, you know, cracks in a relationship, under pressure, those cracks are going to become more like gaping holes. Okay. So this is a little bit like, you know, how sometimes there's that cliched idea that we have a broken relationship, so maybe if we have a baby, the relationship will get better. It's a little bit like the baby that we thought would make the relationship better, and it's not making the relationship better. If anything, it's bringing out those stresses even more so, because if you couldn't rely on your friend to return your calls and return your messages and include you in conversations, then COVID might make it more likely that that person is even more going to demonstrate the behaviors of excluding you or being inconsiderate to your feelings. Or perhaps treating you poorly, because everyone tends to have a shorter tether or a shorter fuse when there's stress involved. So some people might very, very correctly and accurately be noticing that there is more pressure, there's a bit of a boiling pot situation going in with their friendship groups, and people are stressed and nerves are frayed, and people might be a bit more snippy to one another. And that's probably not, it could be that that is not something that's a new issue. It might have been something that has been bubbling away for some time. So in those situations, it is obviously hard to, you know, end relationships with a person when you are already isolated, if you're already experiencing isolation. So what I like to remind people of is that, number one, your brain is not designed to handle heaps and heaps and heaps of friendships, heaps and heaps of relationships. They've mapped on, you know, the big parts of our brains, like how big they are and how many friendships you can actually handle. And the literature is saying, the leading researchers in the area are saying, your brain can only really handle 5 very, very close relationships. And that includes your family as well. So one of them might be mum, one of them might be dad, one of them might be a sibling, and that means, or a child even, and that means you've only got a few spots left there for very close relationships. We're not designed to have oodles and oodles and oodles of very, very close friends. We're designed to have a few really good friends. And by cutting ties with toxic friends, what you're actually doing is making space for some of those good friends to actually come into your life, so you're not constantly giving your time, your money, and all your energy to the toxic ones. So take solace in that. You're not designed to have hundreds of Facebook friends. In as much as social media wants to tell you that, you're not designed that way. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. The second thing I was going to tell you, in all the studies that we've got on friendship and loneliness, the literature is telling us that you're not alone. You know, 75% of the Australian population in the age group of 16 to 24 are reporting that they don't have a close friend they can call on. So you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. if you're not crazy, you're not unlikable, you're not a bad person, which are all these common thoughts that go through our head when we get stuck in a situation like this. Oh my God, I've got no friends. Nobody wants to be my friends. I'm going to be that person with no friends. So I have to stay with this crappy friendship because if I leave them, I'll have no friends. But actually, all of us feel that way. All of us, almost 75% of the population feel that way. So if we could all just take our blindfolds off for a second and see each other, you'd see there are hundreds of thousands of other people your age who also want to make new, true friendships. So maybe this fear of having no friends is actually keeping us tied to the toxic ones.
Yeah, and not giving you space to find people you really gel with and who actually bring good things to your life rather than taking all your energy away.
Absolutely.
So we only do have a few minutes left on this timer, but I still would love a quick, like, 2-minute condensed version of your advice on how to break up with a friend. And, you know, if listeners want the full story, they can go buy your book because I'm sure you laid it all out in great detail.
Thank you, Maggie. I'll send you your check. It's in the mail. okay. Yes, a quick condensed version. If you have decided that, okay, I've given them time, I've explained what I need, they haven't changed, there's two different options. You can pull back on the relationship. I call it the silent slip away. Not ghosting. This is not about ghosting. This is about matching their effort levels. So this is good for people who are going to continue to be in your life because maybe you're related to them by blood, or maybe they're part of a wider friendship group. We don't want to burn bridges with people or, you know, destroy relationships with people who might be on the panel of our next job interview, right? So sometimes it's totally appropriate for you just to pull back and to match their effort levels. So when they ask you to come over to their house and help move the pool table, you can say very politely, no, thank you, I'm not able to do that. Or when they ask you to drive them to the airport, you can say, no, thank you, I'm not able to do that. So we're just matching the same level of effort that they're putting in for us. So that's the silent slip away, the pulling back of the effort. And that way, no conversation required, no formal breakup required. Some friends you can't do that with because they will keep asking and asking and asking and pushing and pushing and pushing. And you do need to have a more formal conversation. And in those situations, I believe a direct message is appropriate. And this is where you can, you know, say to that person, hey, you know, since our last catch up, I've done some reflecting on our friendship. And as life gets busy, it's understandable for friends to grow apart. And this might seem out of the blue, but this is something I've been noticing for some time that we've grown apart. And I've realized I'm not able to keep putting the same time and effort into maintaining this friendship. I hope you understand. And I wish you all the best for the future. And I believe you can do this in person, but I believe this is something that's best done in writing. So I'm an advocate for texting. So I actually think it gives you the time to write out what you need and write it in a respectful manner, gives them the privacy of receiving it alone, digesting it and replying if they choose to. And if you feel awkward about sending a text, I always say, tack on the end. I'm sorry I've done this over text message. My mental health meant I wasn't in a place to do this face-to-face with you. And I hope you understand. Just own it. Just own it, I say. Own it. Do what you need to do. And if you need to send it over text message, send it over text message.
Such good modern advice. And I think this will really help a lot of listeners. And communication is key, I think, in all of the, in all of our relationships. And it's so good that we're finally talking about, you know, friendships and how, like you said, everyone's a friend. So if we get better at it, then we're all just going to be better friends. So
exactly. It's the friendship revolution.
Where can our listeners find you and buy your book?
Sure. So my handle is at No Bull Psych, as in, you know, like no BS, like No Bull Psych. And they can also get my book at any good bookshop. And it's also going to be on Audible as well.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
No worries. Great to talk to you guys. You take care of yourselves and keep safe.
Mags, what have you been watching, reading, consuming this week?
Well, this week, I finally jumped onto this massive podcast bandwagon, How to Fail with Elizabeth Day. I swear every single podcast I listen to recommends it. Have you listened to this yet?
Yeah, I love her. She's one of my favorite podcasters and writers.
Damn it. I'm just so behind. She's like a great British journalist and author. And she's got this podcast where she talks to like influential people about their failures. And it's just such a soothing and inspiring listen. I really, really, really like Elizabeth. She's very, I was trying to think of words to describe her. And she's like very down to earth and very personable, I think. The episode I listened to was with Marianne from Normal People, Daisy Edgar Jones, and she was like fangirling over normal people in that episode. And I loved it because that's exactly how I would be. So I liked how she wasn't afraid to be.
To be a fan.
Yeah, exactly. So the episode I want to recommend is called How to Fail Philosophy Special, because she's just released a book called Philosophy. But anyway, she kind of combined some of her favorite interviews into a short podcast, and it was so good. So for instance, there's a really funny story that Phoebe Waller-Bridges shares, and it literally made me laugh out loud. And then there's really, really, really thought-provoking and beautiful segments around heartbreak and rethinking how we view our brain. It's something I'll definitely re-listen to time and time again.
If you want a really good episode, her one in season one, I think, or maybe season two, with Phoebe Waller-Bridge about how to fail is so interesting. And especially for any aspiring actors and playwrights out there, it's really good advice. Kind of adding on to your recommendation with a bonus round. she's really great. I haven't read any of her How to Fail books yet, but I would love to. She's such a great journalist. Mm.
And what about you, Jasmine? What else would you like to recommend?
This week, I watched On the Basis of Sex, which is the biographical film about the early career of Supreme Court Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who sadly passed away last month. It's directed by Mimi Leader and stars Felicity Jones as Ruth, and then Armie Hammer from Call Me By Your Name as her husband, Martin Ginsburg. It starts off set in the 50s when she's first admitted into Harvard Law, and the battle she faces while studying. So obviously at first there's a lot of gender discrimination at the university, and then her husband is diagnosed with cancer, and they also have like a one-year-old child. Ruth is looking after the child, looking after her husband, taking his notes, and then doing her own classes, going home at night to like work with him on his stuff so that he can still pass. So yeah, amazing story. And then it follows her throughout the 70s when she couldn't find work as a lawyer because she was a woman again. And then finally to the first case where she begins changing so many laws around gender discrimination. It was a really great movie, and especially watching it like, you know, so recently after she's passed, it was nice to learn some more about her. It was crazy to see how far we've come in gender discrimination in like 50, 60 years. Like there's still so far to go, of course. Like it's always a fight. Yeah, a lot of the rights, especially for American women, a lot of the rights that they have now were because of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Yeah, it was really, really interesting movie. So I would definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, I didn't even know there was a biographical film about her. I think I will definitely give it a watch. I always watch what you recommend. I watched Enola Holmes last night as well, actually.
What else do you recommend this week?
So this is another fun little watch. Been watching a lot of YouTube. And one of my favorite things I discovered in quarantine, which is like really popular again, this is quite a basic recommendation, but it's Architectural Digest's open door videos. So where they basically go into, you know, celebrity houses and they have a tour. We've talked about Dakota Johnson's one before, like we're a big fan. But they recently released Hilary Duff's one, which was so lovely. Did you watch it?
I watched on the weekend, and then I watched it again. Like I showed my mom. Aww. Because I was like, we love this house and she's so amazing. And like, she's so down to earth. I love her.
Exactly. She's so wholesome in it. Like she gives off major mum vibes. You know, she tells little jokes and she's just like super cute. Hey.
Yeah, I love her.
And I also liked how she'd been living in this home for 8 years. So, you know, a lot of the celebrities kind of like move in, move out. But, you know, I think she's renovated this house twice. So it's a work in progress. She's also got an 8-year-old son, I'm pretty sure, and his name is Luca. And his room was so fun. He has a slide in his room. And I just feel like he's, because she's also got a young daughter, but I feel like he's a favorite. I feel like he's got everything.
She's a baby, so she just doesn't need a slide.
I mean, her room was cool.
I want her bathroom. Her bathroom is like pure pink tiles. I was so jealous of like a 1-year-old's bathroom.
Totally recommend that for some fun, wholesome vibes. Oh, ew, did I say vibes like 3 times? Vibes.
Vibey. Well, we've covered a lot today, so we should probably wrap up. But thanks again to Dr. Hannah Coral for joining us for this episode. We learned a lot and hopefully you guys did as well.
Thank you to everyone who sent in a question for Dr. Hannah. Sorry we didn't get to all of them. We have so many questions. So we think we will revisit this topic in the future and definitely chat about it more.
And we'll talk to you guys again next week.
See you then.